Welcome back to our podcast, A Place to Go, where we look behind the scenes at some of the people and projects that are changing public spaces across Canada, and in some cases, the world. Greetings from Winnipeg. I am your host, Brennan Fadak. In this episode, we are digging deep into winter urbanism and the ability for us to stay connected in our communities during this pandemic. During the summer, it seemed we were able to navigate COVID-19 with outdoor activities, but as the temperature dropped, it became much harder to come up with ways to socialize with friends and family that was enjoyable and comfortable. Yeah, no, I mean, it's great that you have unique enough projects that they're hard to explain.
That's the only thing left for people to do. Our ski hills are opening.
Our guest today knows a thing or two about winter urbanism. Liz Reiford is an award-winning landscape architect who, with her team at Public City Architecture, not only invented the winter sport of croaker curl, but also designed the famous inclusive toboggan slide called Manitoboggan. What is croaker curl, you ask? Well, I'll leave it to Liz to explain to us. And perhaps she can also help us understand a little bit more about what winter urbanism is. Hello, Liz. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, and we're both sharing the same capital city, Winnipeg, on a pretty fun subject, dealing with winter urbanism. So thanks again for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm great. Enjoying the winter so far.
And how have you been doing that in the current COVID situation? Has that been a challenge for you?
Although we're lucky enough to live in a place that we can have quite large yards. And I have a pretty big front yard, actually. And this is the first year we built our own outdoor rink in our yard. And I know there's a lot of people doing that this year. It just got cold enough to really make it fun. We've been working on that for a few weeks, getting the kids outside by themselves, unfortunately, without any friends over. But and I'm also trying really hard to make a toboggan run in the front yard too with the snow, but there's not quite enough snow yet. So every day I hope for more snow.
I appreciate your ambition. I'm pretty sure the most I've been able to accomplish is going out for a short walk every day. And that depends largely on the weather.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I try to make it easy on everybody and have stuff like right outside the door so no one can say no.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to travel for public space if you make these kind of amenities in your own property. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Liz, your firm, Public City Architecture, is known for the pursuit of winter urbanism, which is the title of our podcast today. Can you give us kind of a brief description of what that means, or maybe a definition if you can?
Sure. I don't think I have a definition. I think it's something that's sort of evolving through our work. But I think we found that there's a real need to think about cities in the winter, and we talk about it in like a winter first context. So when we approach the design of urban spaces, we try and think about them first in the winter, how people would use them in the winter, how they would feel comfortable in the winter environment, and then design it as that as our starting point. So, and I always kind of say, if you can make it good in the winter, the rest of it's easy. It sort of happened organically, not really super intentionally, but a lot of our work really has become about that. We've been able to focus a lot on winter recreation and getting people outside and getting people engaged in public spaces all year, but especially in the winter. And I think for cities like Winnipeg, where winter is really part of our identity, we're quite lucky to have, we call it a committed winter, where a lot of Canadian cities don't have that and increasingly aren't having that.
Right.
In Winnipeg, we're quite lucky because we do. And so we can really rely on winter infrastructure every single year for a pretty long period of time. Things like ice, we can make it and it stays. And so we see it as a good investment in our city. There should be more and more money poured into allowing people to go outside. And I think it's also about trying to get people to think about being outside and using the city in the winter. An example of that this year during COVID was that there were a lot of streets open for pedestrians all summer. And then as soon as it started to get cold, they shut them down, which I think is right when people really needed them the most.
Exactly. Yeah.
It would have been great to have cross-country ski trails all through those areas of the city. And, you know, for some reason, that's just off everybody's radar. So maybe there's a little bit of an advocacy effort too, advocacy for like winter infrastructure in our cities.
Right. And that's an interesting flipping of the script, I think, is, you know, looking at Winnipeg as being a lucky place. Yeah. I think there's a narrative that this city is too cold. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that perspective.
I've practiced in Australia and also in Seattle over the years for quite a long time. And so I made a very conscious decision to move back to Winnipeg, which was my hometown. And I've experienced landscape architecture in very different climates. And I have to say, when you think about winter as sort of exotic, it's a condition that most people actually don't get to experience.
Right.
It helps.
That's awesome. And I guess that kind of perspective leads to projects, kind of something maybe like croca curling, which our listeners are probably dying to hear about. So I was wondering if you could kind of explain, again, we'll have images, but if you could kind of explain what croca curl is.
Croca curl is a cross between curling and crokinole. And about half of Canadians understand what I'm saying when I say crokinole, and half don't have a clue. So crokinole is a regional game played on a octagonal wooden board on a table. And the object of it is to flick wooden chips into the middle of the board by flicking other players' chips out of the way. And it's a game that's being played a lot in cottages, around sort of family dinner tables. It's very popular in Manitoba and areas of Ontario. It's somewhat less popular as you move away from those areas. It seems to be almost unknown in BC, but quite well loved in some parts of the Maritimes. What croca curl is a combination of curling and crokinole. So it is played on an ice surface in the shape of a crokinole board. It's basically crokinole played with curling rocks. So it's sort of like a life-size crokinole table. And the object of it is to hit your curling rock or hit someone else's curling rock on the way to getting your rock closest to the middle of the ice surface. There's different scoring circles as you move into the middle. You can play it with two or four or more people, usually in teams. And the object is to get the most points by getting the most rocks closest to the middle of the ice surface. We developed croca curl one summer, just completely sort of randomly as a diversion. We were talking about crokinole, actually playing it in the office and wondering if anyone had ever combined it with curling and thought, oh, for sure, someone's done that. It's so obvious. And then we looked it up and no one ever had. So we spent a few weeks designing this sport or game or whatever you want to call it and put together a proposal for it and just kind of had it in our back pocket. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it. And I had a meeting at the Forks, which is like a really important meeting place for Winnipeg at the crossroads of the two rivers. It's an amazing place that I can talk about more. They're always willing to take a chance with new kind of programming opportunities, especially in the winter. So I had a meeting with them and I actually had a piece of paper with the croca curl design on it in my back pocket and kind of whipped it out and said, hey, would you guys want to build this winter? I think it's a really good idea. And they were like, oh, that sounds really awesome. Just a minute. They went and talked about it. And sort of the next day they said, yeah, we're going to do it this winter. So let's make it happen.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, they just like totally took a chance on it, invested a little bit. It's not a huge investment, which is one of the things that makes it so popular, I think. Mm-hmm. Built it right up on the plaza. We had originally designed it to be on the river.
Right.
And it was going to be quite a bit larger than it is now. When we first designed it, we thought it would be played with brooms, kind of more authentically curling. But we modified it a bit to a smaller ice surface, which worked very well. It was an instant hit. So it opened in January of 2017. And within a very short time, it was all over social media. And it was called like the most Canadian thing that ever happened. And I was on As It Happens, which was like the highlight of my career.
Really?
It wow. was, yeah, it was just like all over the place. And within the first year, that it had been built in about three or four other communities. And the next year, it was just built all over Canada. I've lost count. We made a conscious decision not to trademark it or maintain the rights to it or anything like that. We decided it was better if we could just give it away kind of, it's a gift, I guess, to everybody. And really, we just hope that people contact us when they've built a Kroku curl rink so that we can just kind of stay with the story and see where it's being built all over the place. It definitely has a life of its own now.
Yeah, it's almost like a movement of some sort. And that's awesome, right? That you can be able to replicate this, or people can replicate a relatively simple design and have a lot of fun in the winter.
Yeah, we made a how-to drawing and people ask me for it all the time. Actually, just yesterday, someone from Kitchener emailed and I sent it out to them. And we have rural communities and larger cities asking us for it. And like one of the things I think that makes it so successful is that no one's an expert. So it's very accessible to all ages and abilities. It's actually been very popular with the new Canadians.
Okay.
Who are trying to kind of access winter activities, especially in Winnipeg, where there could be barriers for like skating or skiing. But this is just an open public social infrastructure for anybody to try and anybody to succeed at and have fun at.
Right. Yeah. It's a barrierless play or equitable play.
Yeah.
It doesn't require equipment or money to get going and do. So that's, it's a really important concept. Thanks for bringing that up. So maybe more of a wider sense, you mentioned that Winnipeg is a pretty unique place for winter urbanism and the infrastructure, or I guess the winter, is here. So I know you practice in other provinces. Like, how do you engage kind of maybe other communities or clients welcome the idea of outdoor activities in the winter?
I think that it's increasingly becoming a more important topic. We've done quite a bit of work in Calgary over the past year. Two projects that sort of ended up being in response to COVID restrictions. One in particular really was in an effort to find more open space for dense areas of the city that needed more access to parks, and finding unconventional infrastructure spaces within cities to create kind of temporary park spaces for people.
Oh, okay.
One is called High Park in Calgary, which is a 2-acre site on top of a parking garage in the Beltline neighborhood of Calgary, which is like right beside downtown. And so that project, we were approached to work on that project as a way to kind of transform very quickly an unused parking garage. And it ended up being installed right before winter. So it definitely is a priority to start creating more spaces that people can come to in the winter. That was a tricky site to deal with. There's a lot of snow removal up there that we've been able to deal with. Yeah. Calgary's winter is very different than Winnipeg's winter. So it kind of comes and goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chinook blows it in and changes everything.
So that is actually something that we have to learn to deal with as designers too, and landscape architects.
Right.
In different cities, if we're approaching winter first design or like approaching design in a winter first kind of way, we really have to know the winter.
Yes.
And even in Toronto, it's like we do some work there too. And it's actually quite different there. It's a different kind of cold. I definitely find myself being way more aware of kinds of colds and types of snow and that kind of thing so that we can use it to our advantage. I don't think that we've really had to convince people about why it's important that people go outside in the winter. I guess it sort of comes from our end that we need to pose designs that will bring people to the spaces in the winter as well. High Park isn't just designed for winter, it's designed for all seasons.
Right.
And then we also did another park in Calgary called Park Park, which is another parking lot that's designed as an integrated surface parking lot and public community space. And we brought a ton of color to that project. So that is a really important thing for places like Calgary. Color is very important. It's a very gray, like browny gray kind of place in the winter.
Especially, on parking lots, like they're underutilized space, right?
Yeah.
They are quite dreary. And I've seen a lot of empty parking lots.
Especially now. There's a ton. And so it's actually amazing. In Calgary, the Calgary Parking Authority is willing to experiment with these parking lots and finding ways that they can become part of community infrastructure, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
They're very forward thinking and we're really lucky to be working with them. The Park Park project has some kind of activities that can be done in the winter. And one of the central features is actually cut out sort of sign of a bonfire with a hand warmer in it. So when you stick your hands into the bonfire, a hot air blower turns on.
Oh, wow.
So, it's quite playful. And, you know, I think that's sort of our nod to winter, at least trying to get people out there at all season.
Well, and I think with your, most of the projects where we discussed and the ones that we're going to be discussing further, they have this air of play and levity to them. And I think that also is really fundamental for getting people outside in winter in what is typically a pretty challenging feat to, you know, get all your clothes on and get the family together and get out and go do something. And I think having that kind of that lightness in these designs and that joy, I think is really important. And that kind of brings me into my next project and subject is the Mad Toboggan, which is a really awesome place to play. It won the CSLA Award for Small Scale Landscapes in 2020. So congratulations about that. And if you can talk a little bit about Mad Toboggan, this is one of my favorite projects that you've been involved in.
Sure.
And how you kind of approached a universal design.
So Mana Toboggan is a toboggan slide structure in St. Mathilde Park in Winnipeg. People outside of Winnipeg probably also aren't familiar with toboggan slide structures. It's also a very regional kind of thing that we have here in our park. We don't have hills, so we have to build them. There is actually like a standard City of Winnipeg detail for toboggan slides, which is sort of a rickety old wooden staircase and then a rickety old slide that somehow they are allowed to build. I don't know how, but there's definitely an element of danger in these toboggan slides, which is fun.
Right.
And I'm happy that they exist. We were approached by the City of Winnipeg to replace an existing toboggan slide that was at St. Vitale Park. It had a little warming shack beside it that had burnt down. So they wanted to replace that. And they thought, okay, maybe we'll also replace the slide while we're at it. It's kind of old. So we started the project and actually designed it as an integrated shelter and toboggan slide. So there's two toboggan slides, one at about 12 feet and one at 16 feet.
Wow.
High.
16 feet.
It's actually like pretty fun and fast. It's a little scary.
Well, that's what makes it really fun is having some sort of risk. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
The top of the shelter is sort of the access to one of the slides. And the top of the shelter also provides an overlook onto the slides. And then the warming shelter below allows parents to kind of see their kids sliding down these slides. And I mean, maybe just for a little bit more context, so not just slides, but the park also constructs really long ice chutes at the end of the slide. So
okay.
The slide is what we designed. And then the park staff every year build these amazing ice chutes that go right up to where they hit the forest kind of at the end of it, as far as they can go.
That's awesome. So like an extension of what's there and
yeah.
Increasing that level of, well, I guess risk and play, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're so fast. They have to put hay bales at the end of them to stop people from hitting the trees.
Oh, wow. In Playworks, like we were always talking about how to design risk or bring risk into safe play spaces. And this is just an awesome example of, you know, having that element of risk in obviously a safe way. If it needs to be hay bales, it's hay bales.
Yeah, exactly. I think the risk is mitigated a bit. I definitely think there is a risk still involved in playing here. It's not just like a perceived risk. It really is one.
Well, and that's fundamental, right?
I guess this key element of this project was that after we designed it, the city came back to us and said, but it's not accessible. And we said, but it's a toboggan slide. And then we were like, how could it be there? It's just sort of fundamentally not. And then... Mm-hmm. So they gave us that. They were like, I don't know, but make it accessible. That is our mandate. New park infrastructure has to be accessible. And so we kind of went back and then actually added a ramp that goes kind of up through the forest and then up to the first level of the toboggan slide so that not only can people with mobility issues get up to the top of the slide, but also it's really great for parents pulling kids on toboggans. So
right.
A lot of people have probably tried to get upstairs, like I was doing it with my kids, getting up the stairs with a two-year-old, also carrying a toboggan.
With lower traction because
yeah.
It's winter time.
And everyone's wearing giant snowsuits and stuff. It's like, it's really hard. And people are lined up on the stairs. And so this allows parents to just, like a kid can just stay on a toboggan the whole entire time, basically.
That is a wonderful side effect of developing an inclusive design, is that everyone can use.
Right.
You know, it's not only for people with, say, a disability, but it really affects everybody and benefits everybody. That's awesome.
It was great. And it ended up being an opportunity, really, for the project. Like, it wouldn't have been anything like it was without the ramp, because the ramp also became a treetop walk.
Right.
We were able to design it without removing any trees. And, like, I'm actually so happy that the city put that on us and made us really consider this design and allowed it to be inclusive. And the project actually won an International Olympic Committee Award for exemplary recreation design, and also an International Paralympic Committee Award for accessible design, which we were very, very proud of. So we were up against huge stadiums that had sort of seating for people in wheelchairs.
Right.
And then what was so good about this project, and what the judges recognized, I guess, was just what you said, that it is about bringing everybody to the same place so that everybody can play together.
That's phenomenal.
It's not just about watching. It's not just being, like, inclusive for allow people to spectate. It's actually allowing people to play.
That's wonderful. So I guess you've already kind of spoken to it, but was there like a more of a local community reaction to it as well as, you know, internationally, which is amazing.
People really love it. I've gone there a lot of times. I've taken my kids there to Toboggan, and I hear lots of really positive things. I think it's been very well received and sort of just become a part of people's winter play and a really important part of the park. And actually, people ask me all the time if it's open or not yet. I just had someone asking me yesterday. It's not, by the way, but it is going to be. They haven't had enough snow to build the ice chutes yet. But
yeah, you're from now on the unofficial spokesperson of that particular body slide.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, there's going to be many more in the future, because I think the idea of equity in not only public spaces, but play spaces is becoming much, much more important.
Yeah, like seeing your kids not being able to play on their school playground in the winter because it's slippery, it seems crazy to me. So there's a lot of things that can be done that, you know, like a hill can be like super fun in the winter and the summer.
Right.
Those kinds of like easy things that can be, you know, almost no money or very inexpensive to add to a project, but that just sort of adds an element of play and something that, you know, will be used maybe even more in the winter. Hills are almost more accessible and more popular in the winter in Winnipeg than they are in the summer. And, you know, the grass dies and stuff, but we don't have to worry about that in the winter.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing families sledding down dikes, right?
Oh yeah.
You know, any grade change is always welcome.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned that you've got a lot of support from municipal groups and city groups about doing these projects. So how do you get these cities to approach you with these really cool concepts and to be open to new ideas like these? These opportunities have been quite interesting.
Yeah, I guess we got lucky with Manitoboggan. It grew into a much bigger project than it started with. I had been working with the city on a few other projects before. So that one just sort of came about. And then a lot of the times we actually have to make our own projects. So Croca Curl we initiated it. Sometimes we think the best projects are the ones that we just make up on our own. We don't necessarily have a client. We just have a really good idea. So,
right. Yep,
so you know, that's often our approach actually, is to just be like, here's a good idea. Somebody needs to do it. And then we find the right people to do it. And Calgary, we won a competition to design the parking lot there. And then from Park, High Park just sort of appeared. I think we are starting to be known for being able to implement really quick major transformations to infrastructure spaces and that don't cost a ton. So both Park and High Park are under $200,000. Both of them were built in Winnipeg, fabricated here, put on a truck and driven to Calgary, where they were installed in sort of less than a week. So we call them like instant sort of park in a box or something. And so I think there's a lot of people that are quite interested in that, especially now. Like, how do you quickly activate a space? Both projects were designed and we got permits for them and they were built in probably about 6 months.
Wow.
Which is a very short amount of time. Yeah.
COVID has kind of put, you know, not only municipal groups, but everybody on their heels, right? And,
yeah.
and how to address these changes. And I think, you know, these designs were kind of perfectly situated to address a bunch of empty public space, which mm-hmm. is an amazing feat.
Yeah.
And it's really cool.
I also think as cities start to realize that cars might maybe aren't as important as they thought they were, in a way that car infrastructure basically defines our city spaces, that a lot of them are starting to be given over to people and bikes and pedestrians. And so I hope we're going to see a lot more of that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it becomes, like, right now we're sort of building them, doing most of the projects a little bit more like pilot projects, just to ease people in, make them see how people and cars can kind of work together in. There can be layered spaces and layered uses of spaces. There doesn't just have to be a surface parking lot and then nothing else ever happens in there.
Right.
But what are the other opportunities for that surface parking lot when half the time or more there aren't any cars there at all?
I guess you and I would be familiar with Parking Day.
Yeah.
And the concept of taking back that public space. But it's usually a temporal one-day event where people suggest interventions to go over top of a parking stall that's rented out. It's a much smaller scale to what you're doing, but similar concept, reimagining what, you know, that barren space could be. So yeah, you mentioned that you had worked in Seattle and Australia as well, kind of helped inform your view of Winnipeg. Those communities, I mean, they're quite a bit larger.
Yes.
A little bit more populous. So what are kind of the main differences between those cities you operate in other than Winter and Winnipeg?
Well, it's been interesting to work as a landscape architect in three different countries.
Right.
I do definitely think that the profession is quite different between all of the countries. Sometimes I say, like, what I do in Winnipeg is like a completely different job than what I did in Seattle. The pace of construction is much, much faster in the United States.
Right.
It's very slow, very, very slow in Winnipeg specifically, and quite slow in the rest of Canada too, compared to the United States. Budgets were much higher. There was a lot more integration of landscape architecture on large project teams. There was requirements for landscape architecture, which there is in some parts of Canada, but not Winnipeg. So I always feel like I sort of have to push myself onto every project, where we still see RFPs being issued by municipalities and the major municipality that I live in for projects in parks that don't require landscape architects. That sort of drives me completely insane. I don't know. I throw up my hands. I try my best.
Well, and I mean, the perspective of making projects happen that you think need to happen is probably beneficial in that regard as well.
Yeah, it's like all I can do sometimes. I guess it does make me just be a bit more of an advocate for landscape architecture in my own way, though, in just like doing stuff. Like I'm definitely want to build things and see them and just find ways to get my ideas out there.
Absolutely.
That's, I guess, our kind of advocacy that we're doing for our profession now.
So I got one last question for you. It's a fun one.
Okay.
So what is your absolute favorite thing to do in the winter? And you can say croquet curling. I will allow. But if you have a different answer, feel free.
I'm actually going to say tobogganing. I'm not like the best skier or skater, but just kind of like croquet curl, anyone can toboggan.
Right.
And you know, it's fun to do with kids and everybody. So yeah, I love tobogganing. There's quite a few amazing tobogganing slides around the city, and I love visiting them all in the winter.
Yeah, it's awesome to have, get your kids going on them too and seeing how they experience that as well, right?
Yeah, so. Get them running around, get some energy burned off.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a major issue, right? Children not getting outside in the winter just because of how cold it is and not getting the exercise they need.
Yeah, although I think that's more a parent problem. I think I'm the one that always feels too cold, so I really try and put myself into my kid's brain because actually they hardly notice the cold.
Yep.
So if you don't say anything about it, they just go. They're good. They'll stay out there forever.
Fair enough. That's a good point. I mean, the children's perspective is usually undervalued. So.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you coming along for this podcast, Liz, and telling us all about your projects.
Great.
So thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
If it's one thing this pandemic has taught us, it's that the world needs engaging outdoor public spaces. Even after everyone's immunized, I'm sure my guests will agree, we hope people will still continue to participate in outdoor activities. I want to thank Liz Reiford for being our guest today, and thank you for sharing your fabulous stories, projects, and insights on getting people outdoors in winter and all the other seasons as well. This podcast is brought to you by the Play Experts at Playworks and RecTech Industry, where we share a combination of 60 plus years of experience. Check us out on social media if you would like to learn more about what we do. Thank you for our listeners, and we hope you learned something new today.